So are you bilingual? Are you bilingual, Luke?
Muy, muy pequeño. Muy poco.
Now, more students are learning a second language in college. Spanish at the top of the list, followed by French, then German, but also in the top 10, Arabic. For the first time, according to a new study, there are almost 24,000 college students in the United States learning Arabic. That's more than double the number in 2002. Rosemary Fayal is the executive director of the Modern Language Association. The MLA did this study that we're talking about. So, Rosemary, this spike, 126% in Arabic speakers. I mean, that's huge. What do you attribute it to?
It is huge, and it actually is double from 2002, and 2002 was double from 1998.
Wow.
So it's really an explosive language in schools, post-secondary schools. Obviously, one of the reasons students are attracted to Arabic is the aftermath of 9/11, and they see the Middle East as a hotspot for political issues, for social issues, and there's a natural attraction towards study. Some students want to use Arabic in their careers. But a lot of them, it's just really curiosity, and it's an attempt also, I think, to kind of make cultural bridges, even if they're small.
Mm. One of the things I think sort of interesting is I'm wondering if there are competent professors out there to teach if you have all these kids flooding classrooms, because as we know, that was one of the big issues that came out of even some of our own intelligence agencies. They didn't have enough
Arabic speakers. Yeah, there was like one or two guys.
There were seven.
Yeah. And they're all famous because they were
How about the people who are available to teach?
In general, to teach language and literature at the college level, you have a PhD in the field, and there certainly is right now more demand than supply. So what a lot of campuses are doing is they're using different kinds of instruction. They're using a lot more with the internet. They're bringing in visiting instructors, and they're using professors from other fields like political science or history or linguistics who can also teach language courses. You might know that the Title VI under the Higher Education Act provides a lot of centers for the study of languages and regional activities, the area study centers. So there's a lot of languages like Arabic and other less commonly taught, like Persian or Farsi, also being done through these Title VI programs. So we're meeting the demand as a profession, but believe me, there are far more students who want to study Arabic than there are classes available right now.
The other language that took a big jump didn't surprise me as much, Chinese.
Right, Chinese.
So is the bottom line that American college students who want to study a second language, maybe they're just practical?
They are very pragmatic, indeed. And I also think that they respond to world situations. I mean, if you're going to go to college in general, sure, you want to get a better job, but you also have to have a degree of intellectual curiosity. So what's going on in the world, I think, impacts on students. Yeah, Chinese is up 50%. It's also being taught in elementary schools and in secondary schools now with a lot of help from the federal government. So now we're getting kids who are arriving at college with some background in these languages when before it would be very rare to have a student in college who had any exposure to Chinese or Arabic.
But can a kid really learn Mandarin or Arabic in college in a semester or two? I mean, or is it just they're going to have two phrases? Like I took Swahili in college and I can say jumbo. That's it. I mean, is this really going to be a useful amount of information they're getting out of this?
Oh, good for remembering that word, though.
Well, yeah.
That's good.
Thank you.
That was worth an A, right?
That was worth $4,000 to the University of Washington. But seriously, can kids learn these languages
Not
that are very complex?
No, they can't. And so, therefore, they need really to have a commitment to it, study abroad, intensive language classes. I mean, sure, something's better than nothing. So if you take two semesters of Chinese, you're going to know something. But for real communication, you need several years, and you need some study abroad, and you need an intensive experience. That's the truth. But I still think that everybody I talk to, including my own, you know, students who took Spanish in the reduced method of one semester and y hablan un poquito, right?
But they
still feel that they gain something from it. So, you know, I think, yeah, there's two groups of students, those with who are like sampling and then those who are really committed to advanced proficiency.
This might be an anecdote. You might have to give me an anecdotal answer about this, but in this study, 52% of those students who chose to take a language chose Spanish. Anything to pose Spanish at this point. Is that that's almost necessary at this point?
Listen, over 80% of high school courses in languages are Spanish. So by the time they get to college, the huge majority of those students have only been exposed to Spanish. Also, as you know, the number of Spanish speakers in the United States just keeps growing. Mm-hmm. So it's not just here in New York where I speak Spanish half the day and never have to resort to English, but throughout the country. So I think really it is the second language of the United States.
What about
I give more directions in Spanish because a lot of people think I'm Spanish. I can tell you how to get someplace in Spanish. I mean, I have to take a little while to get it out, but I usually get somebody to the right place.
But do you know the difference between a la derecha and derecho?
¿Qué es derecho?
Derecho is straight.
Straight, and derecha is to the right.
A la derecha is right. See? The Spanish teacher got a chance. I earned my pay today.
What about Canadian as a language? I mean, they're also a border country. That's it, right? That's advanced Canadian.
What are you talking about?
About.
Well, we started this conversation with Rosemary, who's the executive director of Modern Language Association, because of this study which found that Arabic, for the first time, made it into the top 10 languages that students are studying. So, Rosemary, we're going to ask you to stand by, and we're going to go to somebody who made this choice.
Yeah, we've got somebody named Brian Pellet on the line. He's a sophomore at the University of Missouri Columbia. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
Great. Welcome to the show.
Thanks.
So you are taking Intro to Arabic.
I am at the moment. Yeah, I'm taking it 6 hours a week. It's the most credits I have, but it's a great class so far.
What can you say so far for me in Arabic?
Well, to just say welcome, you basically say Ahlan wa sahlan wa marhaban, which just means welcome many, many times.
Rosemary gave you two thumbs up there, our professor in studio.
That sounded fancy.
Yeah, and then just to ask how are you, it's just Kayf Halik. And you can respond with Alhamdulillah. I don't know. It's a different sort of sounding language. We had to learn a lot of the different letters before we could even get started in learning how to say things, because certain letters are completely foreign to our English ear.
What did you take in high school?
I actually took French. I took French since third grade, and then just kind of jumped into this for a scholarship that I'm getting next year. I'm studying abroad for the whole year, so I kind of thought having some Arabic in an Arabic-speaking country would give me an upper hand at least.
That was kind of the motivation. What about the other kids that are in your class? I keep calling them kids. I mean, these could be 35-year-old people that are taking college classes. What are the other students doing?
Kind of surprising. But
why are they in the class, you think, or what do they say?
A lot of them are actually involved in the Foreign Service or want to be. So just getting involved in Arabic, it really makes them more marketable. And I guess for some of them, they even get paid more, according to them. So it's definitely a practical language to learn nowadays.
Hey, Rosemary, do you have a question for our student,
Brian? Not in Arabic.
No, just something about his decision?
Have you ever spoken to a native speaker of Arabic yet? Tried out any of your phrases?
Well, I have a language partner that I meet with every week, and basically the point is for me to help him learn English, but it kind of works out for me because I get that practice with Arabic. He's from Saudi Arabia, so... Yeah, I do that.
And did you make any of those classic mistakes, you know, where the word you said actually came out a different way and it turned out to be, you know, one of those funny words?
Yeah, he doesn't call me out on it, though. He's probably just being nice.
The thing that's so remarkable when you try to take on a language like Arabic or like, you know, Mandarin is you realize or even Russian, how hard it is as a native English speaker. And then I think throughout my day in New York, I talk to 100 people for whom Arabic or Farsi is their first language, and they learned English. And I am like, that guy who's driving that cab or, you know, doing whatever he's doing, his brain is so much more giant than mine just by virtue of the fact that he's speaking intelligible English to me. I mean, it's really humbling, actually.
Oh, I know. You have to get into a different mindset and just realize that everyone else is learning English just to function in this society. And most of those people probably actually know more than two languages. So just the fact that so many people in America only know English is kind of, I don't know, disheartening in a way.
Well, we're adding you to the numbers, Brian, of those who can at least say hello and how are you in Arabic. Mm-hmm. What country are you going to?
Well, I find out in December where I'm actually going. I got the Rotary Ambassadorial Scholarship.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. And they send me abroad, and my first three choices are Dubai or Cairo or Ifrane, Morocco. So I find out December 15th, as I said. If I end up in Dubai or Cairo, I should be fine because both of them pretty much speak modern standard Arabic, or at least they understand it. But if I end up in Morocco, apparently it's a completely different language. It's much more slang, much more shortened. So at least I have a French background to fall back on.
Do you think – I mean, are you interested in going in the Foreign Service? Or, I mean, what about this scholarship? What appeals to you about doing this stuff abroad? You're just curious?
Well, ultimately, I think that I want to be a foreign correspondent of some sort, and working in the Middle East would be ideal at the moment. As Rosemary said earlier, with the political situation there, it's a very appealing country at the moment, or region at the moment, so getting my foot in the door by studying abroad there would give me a huge advantage in the future. And I just want to know what it's like to be out of the Western mindset. I've been here for so long that it'll be nice to experience something completely different.
Rosemary, you look like you had something you wanted to add.
Just that a lot of times students tell me that one of the best things they get from language study is the ability to see themselves from that other perspective.
Mm-hmm.
I also wanted to add that about 20% of people in the United States speak a language other than English in the home. So there's this myth that in America we don't have languages other than English. We've got a lot of them.
Wow. That's an interesting statistic. Hey, Brian, I have a question for you. You know, when you learn a language, you often learn about customs of the country you're studying. You know, especially with Spanish, you learn, okay, I'm going to address you formally as opposed to the informal. Was there anything in Arabic that you've learned that you were surprised about, the way you have to address someone or speak to someone?
Well, one interesting thing is our professor is actually from Baghdad. He's a linguist from Baghdad.
Oh, cool.
So he teaches us all these little customs on a daily basis. One thing that's very interesting is that basically, every time you meet with someone or they come to your home, you are obligated to offer them coffee or a snack of some sort. And basically, you're obligated to take it. Good relations with them. So I'm sure you'd be strung out on caffeine if you met a few people in one day, which probably wouldn't be bad since it's 6:30 in the morning.
Brian Pellett, Rotary scholar extraordinaire, future NPR foreign correspondent, man of the world starting very soon. For now, a sophomore at University of Missouri, Columbia. Hey, thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you so much.
Assalamu alaikum.
And Rosemary Fail, the executive director of Modern Language Association. Thank you so much for coming in studio. It was a pleasure to have you.
My pleasure.
Coming up on The Beep, we're going to talk about this writer strike in Los Angeles and in New York, I guess. We had a guy from New York on this very show. Of course, you're hearing about the writers. What's the effect on everybody else who does the dry cleaning and parks the cars and all that stuff related to this writing business? How are they doing? We'll find out.
Fallout.
Yes.
And you know, when really rich people die, their heirs pay a hefty tax. You're finding it hard to shed a tear for the bereaved billionaires? We're going to bring in an expert who will try to make you care. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.